We say things that don't mean anything, but thanks for listening.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to We Say Things, episode 187. Suns fan here with... What, did you get a haircut?
Did I? Oh, right. We did our episode.
Looking
good,
Cinderin.
Our last episode was Monday last week. Yes, I had a haircut. I did.
Looking good, yeah. Young man.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Looking dapper as always. Well, no, that's not true. You don't always look dapper. You look dapper today. So good job to you.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Anyway, we got some things to talk about today. So let's do the patron shout outs. You can do the first half, which is everyone's favorite half, of course.
All right. Thank you to The Luscious Bav. T-Coil, what is the worst Dota hero you could name your child after? My vote is either Ancient Apparition or Quap.
Probably The Butcher.
The Butcher. That's a good question. I would say Axe. Q-Ludes is reminding us that it's time for the biannual Daylight Savings rant. Stupid Copilot, what happened to fails of the week?
It died.
All right, that's how things happens to everything. D2 Bowie, Servant of Morgoth. Yatoro does it again, Sinran. Dude, how long has it been? You know what would be great to pair with Suns fans' new gaming rig? A refurbished eco-friendly office chair from BTOD or Crandall. Do you need to write hashtag not an ad if you do this? You
couldn't fit it.
I guess it wasn't. Yeah, there wasn't space. I'm assuming there was hashtag not an ad. MagDev is huffing major copying for an NA Dota comeback. Hashtag need a bigger tank. My grandma found out what League of Legends is. She's thinking of building a PC. Valve, you need to hurry. Please give marketing. Disco Farm D, bilingual people have a greater emotional range, yet Sindarin is the robot Stoogie McStooge face Darksea in the house.
He changed his name. Praise
yes.
Gaben. Praise Gaben.
The Mega Pope, run Dota twice for double the MMR. Hashtag Sunsfan TI in New Zealand. Zan Xavier, and that's half. That's more than half.
Nate Thicko, 01 Hamscroats, Bacon, Shark TM, Freshly Seasoned Goat Balls, Janie, Stop. Nothing to see here. Underscore man. Guitar strings. Eve Remort. Extra American. Ben Broomhead says hi to his friend Murray from Pixel. M-R-A-Y. M-Ray. Wooden Aftertaste. Anonymous. And Dark Matter makes up 27% of the total mass of the universe, while Visible Matter only makes up 5%. Mr. Niebling. Did he misspell it twice?
I mean, that's how you spell it in every other language, isn't it?
Is it actually?
Pretty much. It's how you spell it in Danish.
Procent.
In German, you spell it like that, but with a Z instead of a C.
Oh, today I learned. And that should have been the fact.
In all sorts of European countries, it's with a C.
That's an interesting PRS. Fact. I didn't know that.
I mean, if you think about it, this is the Latin way of writing it, right?
Do I look like I know Latin?
Okay, you know what ascend is, right?
A2 Brute, Brutus, Brute something.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Yes, I'm not going to explain it anymore. Let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on. Fine. I just added this after I heard the names shouted out. The Daylight Savings.
Brutus.
Daylight Savings rant. Not really a rant. I figured it out, Sindarin.
Okay.
Chat and I were talking about it, just like a casual conversation. And
okay.
So for me, the time is normal. God, it's actually confusing to even talk about. I went back to PST. Okay, so
okay.
Technically my, like I'm, fuck. My time zone shifted, but my time doesn't change. It's still 2:30 in the morning when I start. If I lived in California, then it would have been different for me. But for me, it's still 2:30 in the morning. But when you change in a week and a half, then I get to do this an hour earlier. Isn't that correct? So I figured it out.
Okay.
Just to let you know, Sindarin, in case you forgot. Okay?
I disagree, though. And
you
that's
disagree?
Because, yeah, I disagree because this has to be a discussion. It's mandatory. It's tradition on the podcast that we can't agree on daylight savings.
Okay. That's, I mean, the world can't agree on it either.
So when So the question now is, when you say earlier, what is earlier really when it comes to time?
Yeah.
Does that mean that we start, when you say you start an hour earlier, does that mean 1:30 or 3:30?
It means 1:30.
Okay, that was a good discussion.
Okay. All right, next is the NBA segment, which everybody's been asking for. Okay, so you know how we traded for that really, really fucking good basketball player named Kevin Durant, who arguably the second best player of this last 20 years behind LeBron James?
And his initials are literally kill death. That's very good. It's very esports relatable.
We traded him, and he was injured already, of course. He was going to be out like three-ish weeks or whatever it is. And we traded my favorite player, who I said is going to be an all-star next year. In his like second game, he scored 45 points. And he's
the
second
new team he's in?
On the new team. And he's the second best defender in the entire league in terms of like where he stood last year. And he's averaging like 25 a game now. He's falling out of control, as fucking usual, as I predicted. Kevin Durant, on the other hand, came back, finally played in games for us. He played in the first three. So the first three games he was back with us, we were on the road. So he hasn't been to the home, done a home game, right? And he was fucking... It's actually unbelievable watching him because it's like he's not even trying, but in a good way. Like everything he does just looks effortless. I've never seen anybody that can do stuff like that he can do. And he just fit right in. Like there wasn't really, you know, he's one of those players that one of the few superstars you can just plug into any system. He's going to be fine. He doesn't like hog the ball. He's very unselfish. So good friend Ricky, AKA you guys will know him as R Cryptic. He lives in Arizona. He's a caster in the scene. He got tickets for the Oklahoma City game, Oklahoma City versus the Suns, in a suite. I've never been in a suite before. That was cool. They give you free food, literally all you can eat, free drinks.
Yeah, so I'm going to stop you right there. It's not free because the suite is more expensive than the other seat, Shannon. So
that's true, but I didn't pay for it. I got it for free.
Oh, I see.
His company comped him a bunch of tickets, and he graciously invited me, and I got to experience.
I'm literally the worst. I'm the person at parties that you just really don't want to talk to right now.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm kind of finding joy in this. I'm just smiling.
I mean, I'm ignoring most of what you're saying.
That's good.
So, out of the hundreds of games that I've been to, never been in a suite, so that was cool. And that was going to be Kevin Durant's first game at home. Okay, it was the home opener. Okay. It's against a team that's kind of meh, but it was like fully packed. Everybody's super excited. I get there and they're about to warm up. They're about to come out and warm up, and you hear the announcer saying, "You guys ready for Kevin Durant?" And everybody's like, "Yeah!" So they come out and to do their like warm-ups or whatever, and I'm looking like, where the fuck's Kevin Durant? It's pretty obvious he's missing from the floor right now. I'm like, what the hell's going on? So a few minutes goes by and he's still not coming out. This is weird. So I look at my phone, got injured. So this is what happened. Sometimes there's an official warm-up before the game that both teams are required to do, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes players come out early before that where the crowd is still kind of out there. They're trickling in, which was about maybe 5 minutes before I got there. He was literally going for a layup. Like, nobody's guarding him, and he twisted his fucking ankle. Like, it literally flipped. Looked really bad. So he's out for 3 fucking weeks again. So he still has not had a fucking home opener. So that is the... And again, I've said this before. I've been a Suns fan for 30-plus years, or whatever the fuck, however long my memory goes back. This is completely expected. He's injury prone. He's getting older. I expect this to be the norm going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And the Suns are fucked. But we'll see. You know, he'll be back for the playoffs, which, you know, maybe things will go well, Sindarin, but very pessimistic.
I think the lesson to be learned here is that you shouldn't warm up, right?
That's right. That's what I do.
It's kind of, if you're going to get injured when you're warming up anyway, then you might as well not do it.
So, okay, that's the one thing I didn't mention is there's literally a video of him getting injured because the crowd is already there videotaping him. So I could literally watch him get injured in practice, which is very embarrassing. And Jesus Christ.
It happens.
That's what they say. It happens only to me.
Here's the pro thing about that, okay? Is that he is giving it his all, even in warm-up. He's really serious about this, so he really wanted to, what do you call, stick the landing? Stick the jump?
Yeah, he stuck something, all right.
Yeah.
Okay.
He wanted to get stuck.
So that's the update on the Suns, a.k.a. kill me now.
Well, at least you said he played well so far in the game.
Oh,
he played, right? So that's
good.
He was
really fucking good. Yeah, it's not about his fit. It's not about anything other than the injury shit. So,
right.
Okay, next topic. As you know, Sindarin, Nikki and I both actually built new computers.
Oh, she got
and
one too.
We right. finally, it was fucking expensive. I'm embarrassed to say how much it was, but we built a computer at NZXT. This is not sponsored, by the way, so I'm going to give my full review so far.
Mm-hmm.
I talked about doing pre-built, so we did it for the first time. For people that are interested in what the specs are, the CPU is the new Ryzen 9, the 7950X3D. And the graphics card is a 4090, so it's a fucking disgusting beast. Mm-hmm. It gets here, and it's supposed to be plug and play, but the issue is they didn't have the SSD that I wanted, or they didn't have the capacity that I wanted, so I had to buy that separately. And then I had to install it. So I had to open it up. And of course, the NVMe drive is literally underneath the graphics card. So I take out the graphics cards of both, put in the NVMe drive. Then I plug it in. Then I run it. Blue screen. Like, oh, that's great. So I'm like, all right, fuck this. I needed to reformat anyway. I like reformatting because I don't want to, you know, mm-hmm. whatever they put on it, not interested. I reformat. Right. As it's installing Windows, blue screen. What the fuck?
Okay, that's bad.
So I'm like, what the... And so of all the computers I've built, over 50% of them had something mm-hmm. defective. I have extremely bad luck with this shit. It's just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
So as I'm doing that, I already have Nikki's computer in the other room. Like, try yours. Blue screen. What the fuck is going on? I'm like, this is... Okay, surely it can't be hardware. Right? It cannot be hardware because that's astronomical, the chances that both computers are blue screening at the same fucking time. So I'm like, it must be some setting. So I go on their support and they, you know, over time, they finally tell me, okay, disable in BIOS the WAN radio. We do that and it works fine. What the fuck is that shit? First of all, they're supposed to test it beforehand, right? Supposed to test it. Blue screen. So I have to disable, I don't even know what the WAN radio is. I don't know if that's connected to Wi-Fi at all or if that's actual antenna radio. No idea. Didn't look into
Wi-Fi,
it.
Yeah.
I want Wi-Fi to work, so that's a problem. But anyway, so after that, pretty smooth sailing. Things run exceptionally well. I have a 4-monitor setup, and I took the opportunity to update the monitors because why not? I got a 4K monitor now on the left, which Sony gave me for free at Arlington Major. It was fucking awesome of them. It's 4K, 144 hertz. Super legit. And then I got a brand new Asus 240 hertz, 1440p, IPS monitor.
To play CS on.
Yes.
For your 60-tick servers.
I've been playing Valorant and Counter-Strike, and my God, it is buttery fucking smooth. Only complaint that I have is the computer is kind of loud. It's louder than my last one.
I thought you were going to say your only complaint was that you had to empty your piggy bank for it.
Yeah, that's another... I mean, whatever. Money's money, you know? It grows on trees, so they say.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Good. I'm glad we established that. So, all of you guys out there who can't afford this computer, just go and pick some money off a tree and get his rig.
I mean... Like I said, this is the first time that I've truly, truly splurged on a computer.
Right,
obviously, this
is
my business. I'm embarrassed to say, Sindarin.
I mean, it's a pre-built, so it's probably... How much would you guess you could have built it for yourself?
I checked.
Relatively.
It was like more expensive to build it myself, which I was shocked by. It's like $5,000 to build this. I think... If I include the monitor
with
that I
or
bought,
without the monitors?
No, with the monitor. No, wait.
With the monitors. No?
Yeah. With the monitor.
Okay.
Ends up being $5,000 for me.
So the PC itself was maybe like
4.2K or so.
4.2.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which that is probably twice as much as I have ever spent on a computer. But the last one I built, it lasted me 4.5 years. This one, Better last me the same.
First comment I see in chat, tax write-off, Poggy.
That's true. It is a tax write-off. Dude, I write off everything.
Oh my God.
Everything that has remotely anything to do with gaming, it's being written off. So yeah, that's the new computer. Pretty happy with it. Would recommend if you have $5,000. But that's the thing. Like, if I wanted to build this computer, it would have been more money. That is insane to me. That is actually insane. It was cheaper to get pre-built. What? That doesn't make any sense.
I feel like that's not going to be the norm. And maybe, I don't know, is that because they have some sort of a... they have access to a supply of something that's just really in demand right now, like the graphics card or whatever, and they get it at a better price?
I don't know.
Because, like you said, it doesn't make sense, right? They're supposed to make money. So if it's cheaper to buy the parts, or more expensive to buy the parts than the pre-built, like, where's their profit margin coming from? So they have to have some sort of... maybe they have some sort of a deal with...
yeah, they get, for example, the graphics cheaper
card supplier or whatever, and they buy a lot of them in bulk and build PCs, and then... that way they get them cheaper and they still make profit on selling them, and it's way more appealing for people to buy the pre-built because it's cheaper that way. That might be what's going on. I don't know. But
yeah.
I'm surprised too. I thought buying a pre-built computer was like 20% more expensive almost or something.
That's why I was so hesitant to do it in the past. But it's like, you're telling me I spent more money and I had to fucking slave through building it. And like I said, it's always something fucking defective. So I have to return it and wait. And it's just a miserable process for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's more expensive? Come on, man. I don't know. Whatever. Okay, so that's the new computer.
Nice that it works well, though.
Yeah, we should play Counter-Strike sometime. When CS2 comes out, we're playing, bro. Yep.
Next week.
That's right, tomorrow.
There's the scoop for the podcast, guys. We know when Counter-Strike 2 comes out.
That's right. It's tomorrow. Tomorrow's Thursday. Oh. Or today, technically. Right. Okay, first topic of this evening that isn't related to random-ass shit. ESL. Apparently is creating a new Dota circuit, Sindarin, with, I believe it was a total of $45 million, although they didn't really say where that's exactly being distributed, but so, it's going to all culminate. So essentially it's Dream League, ESL One, as qualifiers for this big tournament that's going to be in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, which I think that one may, I think it's 15 mil, if I'm not mistaken.
I think the 45 million you're referring to is the total prize pool of that festival.
So there's other
Dota
games.
2 is one, Dota 2 is one of the games in Riyadh at that event, I think. And yeah, the Dream League events, correct me if I'm wrong, are $1 million each. Did you just say that? I think you did.
No, I did not.
But yeah, I believe so. So, or they did? Yes. Yeah. So Dream League will become the main wave qualifying for the Riyadh Masters. 16 teams competing will get to play remotely in Europe over a two-week period for a $1 million prize pool. Invites will be distributed by World Ranking.
So what do you think about this? So the way that I read it, ESL did get a major, but Dream League and ESL got no DPC. Valve's like, fuck you. Like, okay, fuck me. We're going to have a better DPC, something that gives more money than the official fucking DPC. Of course, we don't know all the details yet, but that's what it's looking like right now, which is kind of insane. What's your reaction to this?
And I mean, if the prize pool for the main tournament, the culmination thing, is something like 15 mil, then that also kind of rivals this year's TI, right? What was the prize pool this time?
20-something? Was it 20-something? It's going to... If they keep going with the same strategy, it's going to be less than last year, right? It's going to keep going down. Yeah,
probably.
Insane money.
As always, I'm super happy with third-party tournaments. I think it's great that we get to fill out during the empty time of the year that we do have because the DPC has been shortened. So last year, the DPC was like 6 weeks, and now it's 3. And that opens up for stuff like this to be possible, and ESL jumped on the opportunity. So I'm really happy with the whole league that they're running and this kind of stuff. I think that's great. As far as the whole Riyadh thing, that's obviously very controversial for a lot of people, myself included, if I'm honest. But that's the downside here, right? Is the finals part of it is in Saudi Arabia, which is, you know, has its issues. I don't think we need to go into many details about why that is an issue, but it is an issue. But overall, aside from that, the whole idea of filling this out, the whole league, the whole amount of prize pool that they have for the teams, I think is really, really good. And I hope overall that this just, that it's a good experience for everyone, right? Because supposedly the last time there was an event in Riyadh, I haven't heard any complaints for any of the people that participated, at least.
Yeah.
Players, teams, whatever.
So I
believe that was, they were taken good care of, and it was a well-run tournament and everything, so that's great. But obviously, there's some politics in this.
Oh, yeah.
And there will
no
be.
Doubt.
So every time.
I'm not going to go off on a spiel because we've talked about this before. Obviously, pretty much anywhere you go, there's going to be something you can take from it that's negative, right?
Right.
And for me, I was asked if I wanted to do the Riyadh stuff last year, and I said no because there was a lot of, obviously, there's a lot of baggage that goes along with that. Still is. But also, I wasn't like, they, as far as I know, they've never done a Dota tournament there. So I wanted to see how it went first. Based on how it went, based on the reaction from the people that were at the event, meaning the casters and the teams, like if they were to ask me again, I would actually consider going because of that, it gives me a little bit more confidence. And like I've said before, I was born there. So, and I haven't been back since I was 10. So I actually wouldn't mind just going back, even though it would be in a different setting, obviously. But regardless of that, I think it cannot be questioned that this is very good for Dota. Like, without this, DPC has felt, I don't know, maybe it's patch related, maybe it could be a multitude of factors, but the fact that an organizer like ESL, DreamHack are kind of left out in the cold for the most part, that they're able to build up something like this is pretty fucking awesome for Dota.
Yeah. I was going to ask, has anyone else in your family been back? Because I remember you talked about this multiple times on the podcast. So you would be the first one from your family in the last, what's that, 20, more than 25 Seven. Years that goes back to Saudi Arabia, if you were to go to this.
That is correct. I mean, it's not, we're not Saudi Arabian, we're Persian, obviously, but I was trying to, my parents were telling me a long time ago what, like, so I was born there, and then when I was 18, which I was in the U.S. at that point, I got to choose citizenship between U.S. and Saudi Arabia. Easy choice, obviously.
Right.
But I was told that once we had left, that we weren't allowed back for some reason. I don't remember the specifics. I'm assuming a lot of that has changed since then. It's been a long ass time, so I don't really. Yeah, nobody's been back. The only issue is, like, if I were to go, I wouldn't be able to see my hometown that I actually grew up in, because that's pretty fucking far. But still, it would be cool in some levels.
When you lived in Saudi Arabia, were you ever in Riyadh?
No.
Okay, because I think it would be really interesting. Like, I'm trying to imagine myself that I grew up in a totally different country than Denmark, and then I would go back 25 years later and just see how things had changed, right? Because no matter which country you're from, things are very different quarter of a century later, right?
Yeah.
So that whole experience would probably be really interesting to me no matter where it was.
Especially where we lived. We lived in a town that was 3-hour drive from a major city called Jeddah. And it was kind of built from the ground up, and we had not that much there. I mean, we had a good amount, I guess, but if you go to Jeddah at the time, it's like, oh my God, they have fast food here. Like, that was a big fucking deal for us. So,
right.
Yeah, it would be interesting to go back there, but that's probably out of the question. But either way, I think this is unexpected, but very cool for Dota. And that's, in the end, I think that's the most important thing, regardless of where the money's coming from, regardless of whether you, like, if you're going to boycott stuff, that's fine. But I think, you know, look at it from the higher level as well.
What was I thinking? I lost my train of thought.
Okay, go
ahead. Oh, yeah. About the whole prize pool of this being, let's say it's rumored 15 mil. What was the last event in Riyadh? Was it 3? I think.
Sounds roughly right. I can just check real quick.
I think it was 3 or 3.5 or something like that. I'm trying to gauge.
Four mil.
I'm trying to wrap my head around why this is the prize pool, right? Because, I mean, all of the things that people talk about with sports washing, with, okay, it's Saudi Arabia's way of trying to effectively buy themselves a better reputation. Mm-hmm. I totally get that, but why is the prize pool this big then, right? Like, are you trying to compete with someone? Are you trying to compete with TI? Is that the mentality here? Because I'm just looking at diminishing returns or whatever. Like, does it make a difference for the community whether this tournament is 5 mil or 15, right? That's what I'm trying to get at is what's the additional value here?
I agree to it. There's thresholds, right? I think it's close enough to TI level that makes a big... If this was 5 million, you're like, holy shit, that's a lot of money. But you wouldn't be comparing it to TI. Now you're comparing it to TI. Pretty simple, right?
All right.
I'm not saying that's exactly the reason that they're... Because there's other games involved as well. But if I was doing it... if I was trying to stick it to Valve or something like that, then that's definitely would be on my mind. But...
All right, well, if you were trying to stick it to Valve, then why not 25?
That's true.
Maybe that's outside the budget here.
Yeah, that's the...
I mean, they're 15 was their first season, so they're testing it. They're starting off slow with 15 million.
Well, it went from 4 to 15. You know, what's next?
Yeah, all right.
So TI prize pool's coming down. Riyadh Masters every year is getting higher. Eventually, it'll pass it, and then that'll be the new TI. Now, here's my question for you.
Are they going to buy TI?
Here's my question for you, and... Okay, this is completely hypothetical, obviously. That goes without saying, but I'm going to say it because there's dumb people that take things out of context.
Okay.
If, let's say, the Riyadh Masters becomes $50 million, okay?
Mm-hmm.
TI, let's say this year's is like 15.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say they're at the same time for whatever reason. Teams would choose Riyadh Masters, yes? Over TI.
Probably, at least if it was the same. Let's say everything else was the same, like tournament format, amount of teams invited, and it was the same teams that were allowed to go to either. Probably, I would think. I'm not gonna speak for everyone. I can't say what everyone's like personal beliefs or perspectives are, but I would think the majority of teams would choose the $50 million.
I'd be surprised if one person says no. Literally one person at any of these teams. It's just interesting to think about because, again, 15 million, that's close enough to TI that you can start thinking about that. Like, okay, what if it's 5 million above TI? Then do people choose? Mm-hmm. Like, you're not having, luckily, you don't have to choose between them. I'm just, you know, curiosity got the best of me of what you thought because.
I mean, I guess there's also something to be said. I think it does depend on the player. So first of all, there's their personal perspective, but there's also the prestige, right? Because even if a tournament has more money than TI, there's still something about like the legacy of the tournament, the history, the prestige that goes with winning the international, right? It's kind of like the dream of everyone, but maybe it's only the dream until there's something bigger and then that becomes the dream.
Why do you think it's so prestigious to win TI?
For a couple of reasons. The prize pool is obviously one of the huge draws, but it's also, I mean, a tournament like that just also has a certain pedigree, right? It's like, it's the tournament of the year where everybody is expected to perform at their absolute highest level. It's kind of like the culmination of everything where you have peak performance, the teams have boot camp and whatnot. And maybe if there's another tournament that has more prize money, maybe that just gets overtaken in every aspect. But I'm trying to draw a parallel to something in sports where it's like, there's probably been something similar in other sports, right? Where there is a world championship of something, and then there's been another league or another tournament that has had more prize money, but that hasn't necessarily meant more prestige.
Mm.
In sports, the world is a bit different in sports than esports, though, right? Because the majority of money that sports athletes makes is not from winning. Mm-hmm. It's from sponsorships and salaries for playing for their team
their country. That's kind of the inherent issue. So the closest, again... I know there's going to be probably better examples, but the one I can think of is basketball, where players, let's say you're, first of all, the NBA pays more on average, but if you're a star that has lost a lot of your skills over time, because you're getting older, you actually will be paid more overseas, like in China or in Europe. But that's like on the, you know, that's the twilight of your career, so to speak. That's kind of what you do if you want a cash grab. But then there's the other aspect of if you're in the U.S., maybe that's not true, actually. Before, it was like a big deal with sponsorships and whatnot. You get paid a lot more because your name is out there. Obviously, U.S. marketing is like you're just going to get more money, bang for the buck, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But for basketball, they've caught up a bit for sure in both China and Europe. So I don't know if that's even true anymore. But yeah, like if, I guess if we think about it from the NBA, if the European League or whatever the fuck it's called, they just offer more money to everybody on average, people would probably bolt. But I think there's something to be said for NBA. It's been around for like 70 plus years or whatever it is. So it's been so entrenched. It would be really hard to shift that, right?
That's how I feel about TI and Dota to an extent. But at the same time, I don't know. It's an interesting thought experiment. I don't know if it's going to happen. The thing that will be really interesting is if a tournament does announce a bigger prize pool than TI, what Valve are going to do. If they, you know, if they have some sort of pride or they feel like they have to beat it for the sake of the, you know, the their tournament being the tournament of the year and for the sake of how Dota runs, right?
That's an interesting thought process.
I feel like if somebody announced right now a $25 million prize pool for their tournament and it was run and it was legit, TI would be bigger. I feel like Valve would make a bigger
tournament. I agree. They're probably a bit petty, and I like that they are. Yeah, they would
probably.
But so now we're talking about very specific things that don't even matter, but it's just interesting because this, nothing like this has ever happened before. But let's say, okay, so this is 15 mil. Let's say Valve predicts that the next TI prize pool will be 20. I even feel that that's maybe not enough separation for them to feel comfortable that they would maybe go a little more ham on the battle pass. But at the same time, I think a lot of the limiting factors from Valve is that people just aren't on the Dota team, I assume, anymore. And they just literally can't make the big battle passes anymore.
But here's the thing, Shannon. They're almost done with Counter-Strike 2. And as soon as Counter-Strike 2 comes out, they come back on Dota.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be fine. Don't worry. Just huff it up.
I'd be so fascinated to know how many people from Dota are working on Counter-Strike, because I have very outdated information, extremely outdated, because I remember visiting CSGO or the Valve offices when CSGO was just getting started. So this is over a decade ago. And I heard from a few employees that they basically just didn't talk to each other ever, which makes sense, but there's like almost no crossover at all. Because you can work on whatever project you want, but basically there's no crossover. Like, people that are doing CS are interested in CS. People are doing Dota are doing Dota or other stuff. But
so what did the Dota people go to then?
Artifact.
I mean, we still have this wild card in what the hell Neon Prime is. I feel like we haven't heard anything new since. When was that trademarked? Was it sometime middle of last year or whatever?
Yeah, something like that.
I'm really curious what that's going to lead to. Or if it just is just going to die out. Like, if I mean, I'm not like, oh man, they haven't said anything for half a year. I wonder if it's even anything. I'm not like losing sleep over it. I'm just curious. Like, it would be cool to hear some sort of news or a leak or anything.
We probably hear, or probably don't hear about most of the games that get canceled internally. But
yeah,
if you're trademarking something, that would make me surprised if they don't come out with it at some point.
Right, because they haven't done that before, right? They haven't trademarked something and then not used it, have they?
Not that I know of, but that could have happened. Okay. But I feel like if I had heard that, I would remember.
Mm-hmm.
Like Gaben's Milkers. I don't think they've ever trademarked that. That's not a game, right? So Jenkins and I said that at a major, by the way. Like, what the fuck? How do we get away with this shit? Anyway.
That's the thing. You don't. You just don't know yet.
Just keep pushing the envelope little by little. All right, so that's the Riyadh Masters and the ESL/Dream League, I guess, Dota circuit. Very cool stuff. That's pretty major news. Next on the list, we got a list of permabans via Valve and Perfect World, Sindarin. So there was obviously, we talked about Knights being a probable sussy, I guess you can call them.
Yeah, there was some controversy there for sure.
So a list of, I don't know how many this is. Is this like 30 people have been permabanned?
Give or take, maybe a bit more actually. 35 to 40, isn't it?
It's a lot.
Yeah, it's like a 40 large players. List.
So which names, you know these players better than me, are the big ones?
So yeah, just to preface this, these players have not all received the same punishment. But Valve and Perfect World in cooperation have basically researched what's going on in China, which has been sus for a long time for a lot of people. The main thing that's made it suspicious has been betting sites placing odds that just don't correspond to the game state, and then things in the game going oddly in one direction out of nowhere, which has prompted something like this to be investigated. So I believe the shortest ban that players got was 2 years, and a lot of them got permabanned from attending any DPC or any Valve event again. I guess let's look at the big names that most people probably would recognize. There's Alacrity.
Do you know which ones are permanent and which aren't? Because it's mostly Chinese.
I don't remember them by heart. I can see it here, actually. Let me see. All right. So the ones I highlight, I'll tell you how much they're, what their ban is. So Alacrity is lifetime banned. Then you have Flyby, who's also a pretty notable player, lifetime banned. Felix Xiaoba, lifetime banned. A player that we thought was interesting, I don't know if it was, if you and I talked about it, I don't think we did, but MKS was also looking like a really promising player, lifetime ban. So this list doesn't separate them into teams, so it's a little bit hard to just look and just find all the Knights players immediately and check if they're lifetime banned, but I believe they are. At least XCJ just stands out here, lifetime ban.
Ego
lifetime ban. And then a lot of the eHome players have been banned for 2 years, if not all of them. I mean, this list is just... Oh, actually, sorry, excuse me. The shortest ban is 1 year. So 1 year, 2 years, and perma are the tiers that they did.
Yeah.
And the majority of the players have been lifetime banned. Or about half, I guess. Half lifetime banned. And then the rest split into about another quarter, 2 years, and
so
a quarter, 1 year.
So we've had this early on. We had discussion about Smash being permabanned a long time ago, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I think we were kind of on the same page where I felt like a permaban was too strict.
Yeah.
Because depending on the region, like sometimes you're a stupid kid, you just need money. You're not, you know, the DPC doesn't pay enough, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, you know, permit, like a 2 year ban is going to crush most people's careers anyway. So what's the point of permabanning? It's a little strict. Mm-hmm. Now that it's been over a decade that they've been doing this, I feel like you should get the fucking memo already. Like, I don't know if I care anymore that they're permabanning.
Yeah,
like, it's,
I guess I'm a little bit in the same boat, right? Like, the first person that did this was Solo, which is, or not, he's not the first person ever. He didn't invent.
He invented
throwing,
it
right?
for Dota 3-2-2.
But obviously that's a big meme that he put $100 on himself losing and the odds were 3.22. So that's why the whole 3.22 meme is there. And that was discovered. But since that was the first time that happened, that kind of set the precedent, but he wasn't banned for it. And after that, Valve were like, if anyone ever does this again, you're out, basically. Mm. So Valve have been very clear about their stance on match fixing, that it's just lifetime ban. Which makes me wonder, the players here that got 1 to 2 years, what did they do? Because I feel like if it was everyone who match fixed, I think it's just lifetime ban from Valve's perspective. Yep. I don't think they care. I don't think they care how much money they made from it. I don't think they care about how many games they did it in. Which makes me wonder, the other players that got shorter bans, what was a lesser crime in their eyes that warranted that? I don't know. That's a little bit of a mystery, but yeah, I guess I'm a little bit in the same boat. Like I'm against just lifetime bans of stuff in general, because I feel like people can change and can better themselves. And that, like you said, sometimes the perspective that people have, it's easy from the outside to just be like, what the fuck, man, don't do it. But if you literally can't pay your bills and your family is struggling and this is the way for you in the moment to get some relief, I understand that people would do it. That doesn't mean I think it's good. Obviously, it's, you shouldn't do this ever, but the perspective can be different. And the thing is, at this point, like you said, people know the risk. And I think, honestly, it doesn't really matter what the punishment at this point, whether it was 2 years or a lifetime, right? People know what they're getting themselves into. They make the deliberate choice at this point.
Yeah, and I think one aspect of this that we haven't talked about that much, that I have a little bit of knowledge, not a ton, a little bit of knowledge on, is that match fixing in China has been like rampant for many years.
Yes.
Now. Yeah. It's something, it feels like it's kind of a open secret in the community. Like, again, I'm not going to say I can provide proof, but there's people that I trust that have inside knowledge on this stuff, and this is very normal. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure this list, even though this is like ridiculously long, this is the longest ban list I've seen from Valve ever.
Yeah.
This is probably just a fraction of what's going on. That scene
I
sounds
would
like,
agree that that's likely, yeah.
Scene sounds but, like it's a big mess.
So the thing that I'm hoping with something like this is that now that you see such a meaningful list from Division 1 and Division 2, that this maybe dissuades at least some people from doing it. I don't think this is just going to be like, oh shit, they're on to us. We're all going to stop now. But I hope that this can at least put a little bit of a dent in the problem and maybe over time also show that Valve and Perfect World are trying to combat it. It's easy to say just fix it, lol, because, I mean, if this is really organized and underground and a big, like, this sounds a little bit conspiracy-like, but let's say this is, like, full-on organized and run and there's hundreds of people in on it. It's hard to just, like, figure it all out and just shut it down entirely from Valve's side. But if they're at least taking a stance and they're doing something about it, that's already something. This is something the community wanted to see, right? There had been too much silence around this whole shit in China for too long, and now something is being done about it, so that's good.
Yeah.
And I guess the whole thing got sparked by the Knights thing, right? That's kind of what got people talking about it more again.
That was embarrassing. To cast those games was, like, genuinely embarrassing. But
It was really weird. I'll say it that way, and we can only speculate how much of this was shady and how much of it was legit, because when they were playing well, they were playing exceptionally well, but the difference between how they played in the China DPC and on LAN was night and day. No pun intended.
Nights and day, yep.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. Don't match fix, guys. Don't cheat. What can I say? It's pretty fucking dumb. It's really bad for the integrity of the game. If you do get caught, you're gone forever.
Well, maybe they made enough money.
I mean, all of us wish that this wasn't the problem, right? But at the end of the day, there is a huge market for this because of how much money people bet on games. And I'm not going to say ban sports betting, because I think I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with people gambling. I don't have a problem with people betting in general. I think as long as people are informed and it's properly run, then that is something that a lot of people enjoy, and I don't have an issue with that. But I do recognize that something like this can come from it, right? And it has been a problem in regular sports as well for decades. That betting just fucks with things.
Betting, so and there was a bunch of scandals in the NBA. Again, this is my experience with that sport. Mm. And obviously, you have to be very strict, which they were, which helped embolden the scene, I guess, is a good way to put it, revitalized it. But then when money comes in, sharing it enough that, like, they're making ridiculous amounts of money now, like, in percentage-wise. Whereas, I'm not saying this is Valve's fault, but the DPC does, I mean, that, like, okay. The DPC not paying well is Valve's fault, technically, which they should be paying more, but it's not their fault that people are cheating because of it. It's like an indirect relation, if you will. But that is one way to combat it, is just, you know, pay more money. But I mean, we're a long ways from being a traditional sport, which is good and bad. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Next thing on the list is Sumail is suing evil geniuses. This article was written by Richard Lewis, who broke this story. He's been all over the place with Counter-Strike 2 and all that shit. He's been a busy boy. So I'll read a couple snippets. The allegations relate to stock that was given to the player at the height of his stardom. In 2016, the organization was keen to retain his services for the foreseeable future and presented Sumail with 400,000 shares in the company. In 2019, the org was acquired by Peak Six Strategic Capital Group, and as part of that merger, his stock was converted to 250,000, essentially, units of common stock and 100,000 units of restricted common stock. So I think I'm not going to lie, there's a lot of stuff I don't understand about this, but part of the new agreement which I think means in 2020. His contract, he was getting $20,000 a month, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus fucking Christ. But then after the fifth, sixth placement at 2019, they no longer wanted him on the team, obviously, which is when he started bouncing. Remember, that was that weird period where he was kind of allowed to play, but not allowed to play, like, and he couldn't talk about it. So eventually he went down to $2,000 per month, which is 10% of what he was getting. Of course, he wasn't on the team, though. So he was like a streamer or something. He wasn't really streaming either, though. So I don't know what the hell that was for.
It was chilling.
So, yeah, what do you think of this article? Definitely a new thing for Dota. I'm trying to remember a time where something like this happened.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of the reason why this is such a big story is not only that it's Samael, right? It's a superstar who has won TI and is regarded as one of the best players ever in the game. So that obviously makes the story big. But it's also that amounts and stories of this type are probably kind of uncommon in Dota. So the reason you don't hear about it that much, from my perspective, is probably that something like this doesn't happen that much. That doesn't mean that, similar things don't happen, but they don't happen in the same magnitude, right? Players that play for orgs, the smaller orgs, don't have stock in the org or have salaries of this level, right? Like, this is an edge case. This is like top of the top in terms of salary. And on top of that, it's also because a venture capitalist group, I believe, Peak Strategic Capital, right, buy the team and change the way things are run, and they change the leadership of the org and everything. So, like, a lot of the things that Samael might have signed up for and that he was used to just got completely revamped. And there's a good chance here that some of the things that happened, that he might have signed off on something that he didn't truly understand or have read in depth. But it's also entirely possible that they full-on just pulled one on him, right? Either way.
It's a he said, she said right now. But
it's obviously terrible no matter what, right? Because, like, it's just a shit situation, whether one or the other is in the right. Whenever you get to this point where a player sues their org, it's obviously something along the way went terribly wrong in communication or in mutual understanding and respect. So it sucks. And I'm sure the majority of the community with stuff like this will side with the player, right? Because that's just the way of things. But I don't know enough about this. I feel like it's likely that Samael is in the right about this stuff and that he could win a case here. I believe this has also been running for a long time, right? I believe this is a new story, but the process has been along for a long time, right? Because, like you said, December, it was 2019.
December 2021 is when the legal battles technically started.
Yeah, and the whole issue probably started in 2019, right? So it's possible that Samael tried to find ways of solving this and just couldn't get it through. And then at some point, he just reached a breaking point. He was like, fuck this, I'm going to sue you guys, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, can you think of similar stories from esports in general where players sue their orgs? There are some, I know, but
I mean, I don't know enough about other scenes. But in Dota, I don't think so.
Dota feels like very unique because most of the time, even in top teams, players that have really good salaries or whatever, there's like some sort of a mutual understanding between the org and the players of what they sign up for and that things are on borrowed time. If performance isn't great, they might get replaced, or they might get worse renegotiations or whatever down the line. But something like this to me is pretty unprecedented almost.
Not only that, and apparently it will go to trial with a jury. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And it's going to be on June 26th of this year.
And what he's suing them for, I think you didn't mention, is breach of contract and fraud and deceit. Those are some pretty serious categories.
Yep, sure are. So that will be fascinating to see what happens with that. I don't know where the trial will take place. I would assume NA, and what's allowed in Like, they allow reporters and stuff usually to trials, right? So I wonder if somebody's, like, physically going to be there reporting about this to the esports
and
community.
Something I would be really curious about with something like this is, if Sumail wins, what damages does he sue for? Because it's like, it's one thing that, let's say the org, two hypotheticals here. Let's say one thing is they paid him less than they were supposed to, and they kind of pulled one on him or whatever. The other one is, if they retained him within the org and prevented him from finding success elsewhere, which is why he was quiet for like 2 years, not playing in that many teams or anything, right? Like you said, it was a little bit, can he or can't he play for other teams?
Yeah.
How do you quantify the value of that?
Yeah, like that's where the jury...
a year or two at the peak of your career.
Yeah, that's
right?
Where the jury... So again, we don't know enough about this, but that is the place where the jury can come into play a lot, and I think Sumail will have a big advantage. Because you make it very clear, obviously these are people that won't know what esports is, because generally how it works, the both sides can choose and veto certain jurors, but there's going to be enough people that don't know what esports is. So having to explain that, but then making sure they understand the gravity of, like, this guy's in the prime of his career, early 20s. That's when he's literally at his best. You have to make that, like, crystal fucking clear. And then if he wasn't allowed to participate for however long, it is hard to quantify what that means.
Imagine he wins the court case. It's like he won TI.
Yeah.
Gets like $10 million in damage. It's like, okay, I won TI twice.
Two timer here. Yeah.
Oh, well, man.
It's pretty interesting, though. Yeah, I'm sure we've had stuff like this before that's just been not public. So the fact that this is going to trial, I guess, makes it public domain at that point. Okay, final Dota topic, Sindarin. We don't have to spend too long on this, but Muerta's been out for a bit now. What are your thoughts on her? I believe she has a 41% win rate, very low, I want to say.
I saw a graphic on it where Muerta's highest win rates in Immortal are positioned 4 and 5, by a significant amount even.
That's unfortunate.
And I think unfortunate is maybe a good way to put it, because it feels like the design was intended to primarily be a carry.
Oh, yeah.
Which means that some things that were meant to happen and some expectations just weren't met. But with that said, I think the design overall, I'll stick by what I said last time. I think it's fun. I haven't personally played it, but I've played with and against it. And I think the dynamic of what the hero can do is interesting and unique. The main problem that I see, and I also think the community is talking about, and that we also talked about last time, was her ult not hitting BKB, right? It's really weird to feel like you're gimping yourself against the enemy cores later in the game by activating your ulti that gives you damage. I think there's multiple ways around this. I saw a suggestion that her ulti should make her damage pure. I don't like that suggestion. I think that sounds omega broken, so I don't think that's the way to do it. But if you do want this hero that has the duality of, like, magical physical damage, make it a toggle. I still think that would be interesting to see. Like, you activate your ulti, and for the next 10 seconds, you can switch it on and off. So you can choose whether you want physical or magical damage. But whichever one you choose, you still get the bonus damage.
Mm.
So you just have a flat amount plus, and then you can, like, switch in and out of ghost form at will. Like Troll switching from range to melee on Berserker Rage. You can literally just make it two buttons. See what that does to the win rate. I think it's going to be a huge help, because from my perspective of playing a little bit with and against the hero, I think the hero has really strong timings, and then it just falls off a cliff against certain things later. And is fully dependent on enemy BKB cores being locked down before they get it off, or stuff like that. So, and I guess the reason the support win rate is better is that its initial first two skills are actually really good. You have a directional fear, and you have an amazing AoE silence and slow. And then if you are a support and you pop your ult and you can do some good damage in the mid game as a support, that's really nice. It's kind of like Marcy, right? Mm-hmm. Where Marcy had really good kits for laning, and then even as a support did significant teamfight damage with her ult. It's kind of how I see this hero, and that's probably why it's thriving more as support. But
I hope they don't go the Marcy route and cater to both sides. Make this a fucking carry, clearly. That's what I want to see. More int range carries. Lina, Nature's Prophet.
How do you
Muerta?
How do you make a hero a carry?
You make the well, a lot of it could be stats related. No, that's not true. Marcy's stats went through the roof and she'd be I would say like any CC that they have needs to be like the icing and not the main component of the hero.
Right.
So buffs to her passive, for example, that's not a support skill at all.
I'm just trying to think because over time, heroes that you couldn't even imagine being supports have been supports at a time. Yeah. Like there was a time that Phantom Assassin was played as a four with Orb of Venom and Blightstone and throwing daggers at the enemy mid hero. You know, like people find strategies and niches sometimes that you wouldn't ever think of, and then they just work until they get changed, right? The PA just got nerfed, so it couldn't do it anymore, effectively. And then it became a carry again. But it's just an interesting thought from like a game design perspective that with the way Dota actually works, I think you can strive to make a hero a carry, but doing that while still keeping it fun is likely to still make it playable as a support, which I personally don't have a problem with that. I think it's good that heroes are flexible.
Yeah,
And I think a big part of the reason why some carries are more or less only played carry now is that they're from a different time where hero designs, I don't know, flatter is the right word, but like a lot of the carry designs are very old and they just don't lend themselves to support-ish play. But if you release heroes like that now, I don't know if people would celebrate them as much or if they would be like, it's not really that fun, you know? Like people love this action stuff that you can go around doing stuff. You have like high impact spells that are unique.
Yeah.
It's easier to make heroes that are not carries specifically, but can do everything else, which is what they've done with a lot of the new releases, right? Like Mars, Willow.
I mean, I know you talked about it. It really is difficult to have a carry that just can't fight other carries when they get BKB. It's just really strange that something needs to happen with that. I agree. Okay. Chat is reminding us that there's roster changes. I didn't write down any of them because I actually forgot, but the secret one is the one we'll highlight and then we'll talk about one more topic and call it a day. So secret part ways with Resolution, my boy, and Zayats. And they move Boom to the off lane, and then they pick up, Chrysalis stays as the one, they pick up Armel and Yamich. Armel's going to be the two, Yamich, however the hell you say his name, is the four. So a totally new roster now.
Yeah, and the rumors were way off on this team as well, right? At least some of them were.
What were the rumors?
So there was a rumor that they were getting Ramzes, right? And I thought that might very well be happening, that they were going to grab him and move pieces around. I guess after the disappointing previous season, a lot of people maybe thought they were just going to, you know, be like, all right, it didn't work with Boom, but we had great results with Rezo and Zayats, so let's try another player and keep the rest intact, right? Because they had great result at TI, and which was in recent memory. But no, they didn't do that either. They kept Boom, and they moved him to three, which he hasn't really played much of before. Like, all of his pro career that I can think of, he's played two. Maybe he played it in the past in other teams, but you know, mostly known for Gaming Gladiators and before that, Viking GG, playing mid. And then, yeah, I guess those are the rumors that weren't true. The rumor that I did hear that ended up being true was Armel to mid. And I think Yamich wasn't really rumored much. It kind of just came out of nowhere. I guess part of the reason people might have also thought about Ramzes, I mean, first of all, he was available, right? But also that Secret were reaching a point where they could technically become a full-on Russian-speaking org if they wanted to, because Puppy has played for teams like that in the past, right? He played for Na'Vi at TI1. They were all Russian-Ukrainian, and then him, and he speaks, I believe, Russian either fluently or at a high level, at least. So he could easily play with a team like that. Maybe that was a direction they could have taken. But yeah, they remain international and they move things around. Armel will be very interesting to see in Western Europe.
Yeah, they
and Yamich has been He's been ranked one on the leaderboard as a four. I think he's also been one of the very strong supports from the Eastern Europe region. But it's definitely a major shakeup. I don't know how this is going to go for Secret. I think it's a very bold move.
Their second mid laner now from SEA mid one a while back, and he had a pretty successful run. But yeah, it's pretty exciting to see such major changes. Very sad for Rezo, of course. I was also surprised that that ended up being the case. I mean, this is a team that got second at TI, man. One DPC season, and now all these changes. That's kind of ridiculous.
Yep.
But obviously the big change was Nisha going to Liquid, right? That's the big one. So that's the first domino that fell for them.
And now Rezo is going to play for OG, right?
Yeah, that was with... where is that roster, actually? I guess it's not technically official yet.
I mean, they did register it in the... they had to register it because of the roster lock, right?
Is the lock done already?
I think so, right? I think the roster was... correct me if I'm wrong. It was No One, Topson, Rezo, Seb, and... shit, who was the last guy? Why is that eluding me right now? Kitrak, that's right. So NA position.
They already qualified for closed quals. Okay.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't know if it's just me. Maybe it is. Maybe I'm in the minority here. I thought the DP... maybe it's been like this before. I felt like the DPC started way too fast after the major. There's no break. It's kind of insane. Like, surely there needs to be some breathing room there.
The thing is...
but Div 2 starts like right after, right? So...
there's pros and cons to that, because we can't have everything, right? We can't be like, we need a longer break in between and then also want leagues like the one ESL is running, right? It's like, there's only so many days in the year. So if Valve like spaced things out, let's say the major ends and there's like a 2 or 3 week break and then the next DPC starts, that time frame is short enough that you can't really run a big scale event for third party organizers. And then the DPC starts. I mean, maybe you could have the break be a little bit longer, but it's kind of...
I mean, I'm not saying there's an easy solution. I'm just saying that's my feeling is as what would sorty fucking start.
It does go very fast. It definitely does. I guess the majority of break that players actually get is leading into the major, right? And then it's up to them how they want to spend the time. Because when did this major start after the DPC ended? Season one. So, hang on, I'll just find this. I actually don't remember this by heart, but I feel like the Division 1 till Lima Major was like a month, right? Almost. Because when Div 1 is over, Div 2 plays.
Yeah.
And then there's a little bit of time between Div 2 and the Major beginning. So it's probably like... oh, there's some overlap as well. I think it was about a month. So the Lima Major started February 22nd. And let me see, DPC Season 1. The DPC Season 1 ended on January 30th in SCA, and it was around the same time in the other region. So, actually only 3 weeks. Yeah.
There's constant Dota, I guess, technically, if you count Div 2, right? Okay, well, either way. Should be interesting to see what these rosters are able to do. A lot of big-name players out there. Okay, final topic, the Oscars, Sindarin. Very important.
Yes.
Did you wrote these down a while ago, right?
Yes, I have your predictions and my lol. I guess I'll throw something at the wall.
So all I'm going to say before we get started is I actually watched for the first time in a while a lot of the Academy Awards because Everything Everywhere All at Once won a shit ton. And I was so happy for a lot of these people. But let's go over our predictions, and then I'll talk about my feelings.
Okay. So actor in a leading role, you said Brendan Fraser.
Oh, I did.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. So
you get a point there. I said Austin Butler. He was amazing in the movie that he was in.
Elvis, yeah.
Yeah, very good.
Good.
Supporting role, you said Ke Huy Quan.
Yeah.
Which is also correct.
That's right, bitch.
I said Barry Keoghan.
Who the fuck is that? Wait, hold on.
Couldn't tell you, but he sounded spicy.
Wait, Barry Keoghan, Banshees. Oh, that guy. That's the guy I thought that should have won. I remember this conversation. Mm. But I was rooting for the other guy that did actually win, which we'll get to.
Right.
But oh, yeah, both Barry Keane, great performances. Yeah.
Then we have leading role actress, where you chose Michelle Yeoh, and I did as well. Did she win?
Oh, yeah, she won.
All right, so that's 3 for 3 for you.
That's right.
Supporting female role, you chose Stephanie Hsu, and I did as well.
Nope.
She did not win.
Who was that? Wait, hold on. Supporting actress.
I think Stephanie was played the. Did she play the daughter in?
Supporting actress. Okay, what was her name?
I mean, that's not.
Stephanie's. Oh yeah, the daughter. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's the daughter.
So that one, Jamie Lee Curtis wins, which she's a much more known actor, and I thought she was great as well. Like very unique villain, and like totally outside of what she's usually done. But in terms of actual performance, I thought that the daughter, the same movie, by the way, thought the daughter did a better job. But a lot of people feel like Jamie Lee Curtis, this was like one of those, oh, she's been around for so long, let's give her an Oscar. I mean, I'm not complaining. She was awesome. But yeah, that was my first incorrect. All right, what else?
And then Best Picture, you said Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah.
And I just went, I feel like Avatar's just going to win. And it didn't, so
there's no fucking way Avatar. By the way, the best,
actually haven't seen it.
Best Picture, it used to be like 5 choices. Now there's like 10, just to make people feel better. Fucking movies like Marvel movies have been nominated. Like, there's no way these movies are gonna win. If they do, then it just ruins, you know, the credibility of the fucking Academy Awards anyway. But yeah,
that's very elitist of you, Shannon. What if there's a really good one?
If they change their entire formula, it's possible.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's impossible to make a god-tier superhero movie. Batman.
Yeah.
The Batman trilogy with Christopher Nolan. That's one of the best trilogies of all time.
Yeah, some of the superhero movies have been very celebrated, right? But
yeah, Marvel is just, it's like for kids. It's fucking cartoonish. It's stupid. Too many jokes. It needs to be, it's serious business. Anyway, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Five. That's good. They absolutely demolished. And I was really happy for them because a lot of cuddly people. First of all, Brendan Fraser, he was not in that movie. He was in The Whale, which I still haven't seen. Movie doesn't look good, I'll be honest, but he is like an internet favorite. Everybody loves him because he's such a nice guy. He was obviously in like a bunch of movies early on, and then he just hasn't been in anything for a long time, and he comes back and he fucking wins Best Actor. That's fucking cool. Michelle Yeoh, first person since Halle Berry to win the award. That's a woman of color, aka non-white, basically. And she did a fucking awesome job. She's been around forever. It's just like, you know, random characters in random movies, and now there's a lot of comeback stories, it feels like. And then the biggest one of all is the guy that I can't pronounce his name. Where is it?
Kehu Kwan.
Yeah, I don't know how to say his name. So is super, super wholesome, super cuddly. This guy was the kid in Indiana Jones, which you haven't seen apparently, which disgusts me.
I have.
And he was awesome in that. And then he said this many times. He tried to, you know, become not just a kid actor, but an actor in other things. He was in Goonies as well, which is a classic. He was in Encino Man with the guy that won Best Actor this year. Brendan Fraser, that was a very old movie. It's like, you know, just some teenage movie or whatever. Mm-hmm. I remember watching it as a kid. And then he was in nothing. He couldn't find work. He talks about how, you know, that was his dream in life to find work in acting. But, you know, during that time, like being Asian wasn't really a benefit to find jobs in Hollywood. But now that, you know, there's been this revolution of sorts, they're getting more roles now. And this, I think he's on record saying, he watched Crazy Rich Asians and was inspired to come back to acting, which is how he found this role, and he was great in it. And he is just one of the most wholesome people. He's just one of those people you just root for, you know? So I was happy to see that he won.
I saw a bit of an interview where Brendan Fraser was being interviewed, and then Kehoe Kwan came by, and I don't know if he was meant to be a part of the interview or if he just kind of crashed it, but they were like super happy, obviously old friends, right? From, like you said, from way back. And it was also, it was interesting to see the way Brendan Fraser talked. I think the way he said it was like, you know, you're doing great. You have your roles. And then one day the phone just stops ringing. That's what he said, you know, like he was just not getting roles anymore. And he was like, you know what? I get this opportunity. You don't get many of those. I'm going to jump on it. I'm going to do everything I can and just do my best. You know, that's inspirational shit right there. That's how a lot of people feel about a lot of things in their life, right? Where something that they used to have, or maybe that they feel like they deserve, just isn't there. And then they get their one shot at it. It's like the classic trope, right? So I think it's also why a lot of people rooted a lot for Seb, right? When he had his run at TI, because he had, you know, he'd had his shots at TI in the past. It just hadn't really worked out. He hadn't had great results. And therefore, most people didn't think he was like an S tier player or really had it in him. It was like, yeah, it's Seb. He's, you know, he's going to get last or whatever. And then he retired and started casting. And then he got this run with OG. And that was really inspirational, right? To see something like that, where a lot of the time when people talk about competition, it's kind of binary, right? It's like you're in and then you fall off and then it's over. But it's a lot more complex than that to compete in any field. Like, people make comebacks that are real. It's not just a story that you see in the movies. These things happen. And it's a lot of it is about luck. It's about getting the right opportunity, and it's about having the drive and really putting in the work. And if there's one thing you can say about someone like Seb, it's that he literally just puts in the work when he,
that is true.
When he plays, right? And that's probably what it was like for Brendan with this as well, right? Like, he got this role and he's just giving it his all, and it paid off. And it's hard not to be happy for those people, especially when they seem like good people too, right?
That's the, I was going to say that's the best thing about it. Like, seeing the same people every year at the Academy Awards, it's like, you know, they know what to say. They're like, oh my God, I'm like, they'll get excited to a degree, but they're used to being there. Like, I fucking love Leonardo DiCaprio. And he deserved more than one Oscar, probably. He's in great movies, great actor, but even somebody that I like, the most you hear about him these days is he's just banging 20-year-olds constantly, despite how old he's getting, right?
There are easier people to cheer for, I guess.
Yeah, so it's nice to have people that are just genuine. Like, they're very relatable. It's very obviously genuine from both those two guys specifically. Which makes you root for them even more. So I'm happy to, whatever direction, I don't know if this was a purposeful thing or just happened to happen that all these comeback stories came to life. I think it's very good for the ratings, honestly. And I think it's, for me as a viewer, I actually enjoyed watching the Academy Awards for once, because the last few years have been awful. The Will Smith thing, obviously the drama is very spicy, but it's like, my fucking God, at a certain point, like, how do you get that fucking insane to go on stage and slap somebody? That is, like, literally needs to be locked up in a mental asylum. Like, I don't know how that is remotely possible for you to blow up like that. Yeah, these people are actually just people, right? We're sick of seeing these fake fucking celebs. That's why people love us, Sindarin. We're genuine. I'm a genuine jackass, and you're a genuine robot.
But we don't lie about it.
That's right.
01001. Gang.
All right. Well, on that note, that'll do it for this episode of We Say Things. Are we changing the schedule coming up? Do you know any?
So I'm going to be going to cover DPC. I'm flying out on Monday. I don't know my exact schedule yet. So the next 2 weeks of podcasts are a little bit TBD for the ones who want to watch it live. And I'm assuming we'll try for the ones who don't watch live and to still release it at the normal time, but the recording hours might just be different. Maybe we'll record a little bit early, and yeah, I'm not going to promise exactly when it's coming out, because if it doesn't line up, if I can't do it, if we can't find a shared time, because obviously our time zones are different already, and if I'm going to start covering other regions, who knows what hours I'm on. But once we know, we'll let you guys know, and we'll still do the episodes. They just might not come out at the exact normal time. That's what I'm saying.
So. Okay, good to know.
Yep.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching. Until next week-ish, Suns Fan Center signing out.
Peace. Bye-bye.
We say things that don't mean anything.
Subscribe.
But thanks for listening.